Hello, welcome to another episode of the Fuck Off Everton podcast with Nathan and Bill. We find ourselves just a few weeks from our final game at Goodison Park, so we decided we're going to indulge in a little bit of pointless nostalgia and pick our first, worst and best games that we've ever been to at Goodison, which wasn't an easy task. I mean, obviously, it's easier narrowing down your first one, but the best and worst has proved a bit of a challenge, didn't it?
Yeah, especially the best for me.
Yeah. I went back and forth and quite a few, but we'll get to them anyway. But we'll go with our first ones. If you kick us off with your first ever game at Goodison, you set the scene for us for that.
Well, this is the issue I've got in a way, because I was 11. I don't even remember it in a way. So I'm just going to mention my... It was 1991, apparently, because I do actually remember watching Cotty playing, so that's the only thing I can kind of give on that, really. But it was a very unremarkable 0-0 draw against Nottingham Forest in March of 1991.
Okay, so is that the 91-92 season then, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Oh no, hang on, it'll be 1991 season because it's March, isn't it? Yeah, it's the 1990-1991 season, yeah.
And it was in March. I have it here, so that would have been the Saturday the 23rd of March at home to Forest.
Yeah, not exactly exciting. Doesn't look exciting.
No memories of that at all?
I mean, I remember seeing Tony Cotty play. That's the only thing I can kind of... That's the only thing I've got, really. But it does look quite... Like, that was the second Kendall spell, wasn't it?
So it was, yeah.
But you've got some good players in there. You've got, like, Keogh, and you've got Southall, obviously. Sheedy. I actually really love Sheedy. Yeah, Nevin. So that was a good... And Roy Keane playing for Nottingham Forest as well. Yeah. So quite a good lineup, but not the most remarkable game. Apparently my uncle said that he wasn't sure if I was ever going to want to go again after that. He also took my other cousin, Aisha, who apparently he took her to a game. She wasn't that keen at all, so she never went again.
Stayed away.
Yeah, but I was sure I went a few times after that, but but the next one I can kind of remember is sort of 94-95 season. So, yeah, I was sure I meant to a couple after that, but.
So what was the game that you clearly recall then from 94-95?
Well, it's actually 95, which Amakachi, because we were in the Gladys Street and Amakachi, I think he scored two. And I think that was it the World Cup? The World Cup was a year before, wasn't it?
Yeah, we signed him after
summer before. Yeah, and I just remember... We were in the Gladys Street, and I just remember vividly how close we were to the players. That's what I remember. That was kind of my first kind of real... But that wasn't until 95, but I'm sure I went to a few before that, so...
What was the specific game?
It was 1995 against Newcastle. Amakachi scored twice.
Okay, yeah, that was an evening game.
Yeah.
7:45 kickoff.
Yeah.
Under Joe Royal.
That's right. So those are the two I kind of, you know, I thought of.
Yeah, do you remember much about that game?
Yeah, no, I did. That's the one I really remember, to be honest. But that wasn't until 95. And as I say, I just remember, I suppose what struck me was how good Amakachi was on the day. And also... Hinchcliffe whipping in free, like corners and stuff, like how close we were to him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been to many matches. It was just like how close we were to him. But I'm sure I remember seeing a match with Ferguson as well, but I need to do more research into all of this. So those are my memories anyway. But on to the next one.
Yeah, okay. Well, I remember mine.
Oh, you're up first.
Vividly. Didn't even have to sort of try and research what game it was. I was eight. It was the 1986-87 season. Mm. So it was our last championship winning season. And I hadn't been to a game before, even though, you know, my family were almost entirely Evertonians. The reason I hadn't been before this point is that my dad is a Copite. So we used to go watch Tranmere together. That was, you know, the team that we sort of picked up as our team to support together. And he supported Liverpool and I supported Everton. But me nan and granddad were season ticket holders, and lots of family members used to sort of take turns to borrow tickets off them.
I was going to say that about mine as well.
I was way down the pecking order because I was by far the youngest of all the, you know, kids, grandkids, assorted cousins of the O'Hagan clan. So I very rarely got to go, but I remember, I think someone had dropped out of this one. And I remember, I think I only found out the night before, and I remember my dad being on the phone, and I was up at the top of the stairs, and he shouted up to me, we're going to Everton tomorrow, like with sort of mixed emotions for him. I think he was obviously quite pleased to be taking me, because he knew what it meant to me, but it meant him having to go to Goodison, which wasn't something he would have been overly keen on. I just remember like just rolling around on the stairs, just absolutely, you know, ecstatic that I was finally getting to go to Goodison. And it was the 25th of October, 1986. So yeah, I was eight, and it was against Watford. So that's our last championship winning season, but that season, that championship winning team was very different to the one before, where you'd had like a really solid first 11 with like two or three others that would just come in when players were injured or suspended. But it was essentially the same team, played week in, week out, even in the cup. And when we won the Cup Winners' Cup, you basically knew the starting 11. But that season, we had loads of injuries, like a few long-term ones, like Southall started the season injured, Reed and Sheedy missed loads, like loads of the main players missed a lot of game time. So we used so many more players this season. So it's quite an odd lineup because there was lots of players who came in and did like a good job in the short term.
Yeah.
But then weren't quite good enough to stick around long term. But it was Southall in goal. He was back from injury by that point. And the back four was Alan Harper, who was, you know, the consummate utility man. I talked about him on another pod when we were talking about bringing players back from the past, because he used to just fill in everywhere. He was at right back. Ratcliffe and Mountfield at centre back. Mountfield had sort of lost his place that season to Dave Watson, but he'd come back in for this game because Watson was injured. And Paul Power in his first season, who was a bit of an odd signing because no one expected much from him. He was like 33. We signed him on a free from Manchester City, and he ended up playing just about every game in the various positions, but he was left back that season. And then the midfield was Neil Adams, who, you know, only played a sort of handful of games, but mostly that season. Kevin Langley, who had signed from Wigan, midfielder who started quite well, but, you know, the sort of pace of the league and everything caught up with him, but he played like most of the first sort of half of the season. And then Trevor Stephen, who obviously mostly played on the right wing, was playing centre mid, and it was quite incongruous then, him not wearing the number 7 shirt. I remember being really puzzled that he didn't have number 7 on his back because he was wearing number 10 on the day. And then Adrian Heath playing on the left wing, and up front was Graeme Sharp and Paul Wilkinson. So a lot of, not exactly household Everton names, but, you know, players that did sort of a good job for us in a injury-ravaged season and, you know, helped us sort of get over the line and eventually win the title. But it was a really eventful game. Like, Mountfield, who'd come back in only because Watson was injured. Like, he'd been completely dropped by Kendall. But he came back in and scored the first goal after 54 minutes. And then they equalised with a penalty from Kenny Jackett like a minute later. And then about 7 minutes after that, Trevor Stephen scored a penalty for us. And I remember that had to be retaken because of all things, a plastic bag blew across the face of the goal just as he was taking it. And the ref made him retake it because this white plastic bag just blew across the front of their...
Great memory at 8 years old, though.
Yeah. I say it's all, but, you know, it is funny. I'm looking at the team, you know, because I wouldn't have remembered the start in 11. But I remember the goals and everything vividly. Like, so remember that penalty having to be retaken for such a bizarre reason. And then we were 2-1 up, and Derek Mountfield scored again, but this time for Watford. He scored an own goal on 78 minutes, and then he scored the winner 4 minutes later for us. So he got a kind of an odd hat trick, two for us and one for Watford, where we won 3-2. But it was a good Watford team as well. Got the likes of Luther Blissett, Mark Falco, Kenny Jackett, John Barnes, Kevin Richardson, who was another really good Everton player who had left that season because he wasn't getting enough game time. He was like an Alan Harper type. He used to come in and fill in like right across the midfield whenever needed and was really good. He just couldn't nail down a starting place because he was up against Sheedy, Stephen, Bracewell, Reed and Heath and the likes of them. So he went to Watford looking for more game time and then won the league with Arsenal a couple of seasons later. So it was a good Watford team. And, you know, the lineup we got out that day just shows how much Kendall had to, you know, make do and mend and shift things around and bring players in for like a few games at a time and just get the most out of them while he was waiting to get the first choice players back. It was a good season to start going. When you actually won the league, I just realised at the time that it was going to be the only time in my time going to Goodison that we would win a league title there.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's like when we won the cup as well. You wouldn't have thought that was the last time we'd win a trophy as well, which is 30 years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, just during this time, we just you know, success was almost assumed.
Yeah. Yeah.
To some degree that we would win something or, you know, be competing right up until the last in something, even if, like, the season before this, we were second and we lost in the cup final. So we sort of lost the double to Liverpool that season, but we were still competing, you know, we were second in the league and lost to them in the cup final. So even though we didn't win anything the season before this, we were still competing, you know, we were one of the teams to beat. But that was a great season. And so memories of it are absolutely vivid. You know, I've not got the greatest memory in most respects, but this one, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's funny. My memory's a bit like that. It's like certain things I don't remember at all, and then other things I remember really vividly. So I suppose sometimes with matches like as well, I don't know if you find this, like if something different from the out of the ordinary happens or you're sitting somewhere different or I don't know, you remember it more? I don't know.
It's not just a match as well, is it? You know, we'll sort of get into that with, like, the best one, but it's often, like, other factors around it, like who you're with. You know, it's like a great gig, you know. It's not always just the gig. It's who you're with or whatever, you know, the whole sort of context of it. But that's my first one. So we'll move on to our worst matches. We'll get the negativity out the way early on. So what was your worst one, and how easy was it to choose?
I've been quite lucky. A lot of the ones I've seen have been quite good, but I have mentioned one before, the Man United one, where we lost 2-0. I think it was 1997, but we were sat in the Park End, I think. Yeah, they just totally outclassed us. That was that Ferguson team. But I've gone for actually a really unremarkable one, just because the memory of it was more vivid in a way. Mm. It was... what year was it? Got the report up here. 2005, Blackburn 1, Everton 0. I just remember it being a really dour game, I think. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And we were sat in the Bullens, and we were sat next to actually a Blackburn fan, and he said, it was 0-0 for ages. And he said, oh, I'm a Blackburn fan. You know what I mean? Like that. And then John Stead, who was just a journeyman striker, wasn't he?
I remember him,
I think we had a few chances through the game and we were the better, you know, we obviously had the better quality in the team. You had the likes of, you know, in that team, Osman, Cahill, Arteta, etc. But he just leapt up and scored. I mean, it was basically a smash and grab and we were at the end to see it as well. I think it was just one of them, like, you know, pinprick into a balloon, you know. Just like, oh, God, okay. Bit of a smash and grab. Totally unremarkable game. You know, one of them. I mean, I haven't really been to any, like, real, like, thrashings for Everton. So I'm quite lucky, really.
That was the season. That was when we finished fourth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that was, you know, sort of threatened to disrupt the progress a little bit, because we were fourth, and obviously losing at home to a team like Blackburn, who I think were sort of down mid-table or probably lower than that, you know, it's the kind of thing that you think, oh, that's going to sort of disrupt attempts to get into the Champions League. I mean, obviously it didn't ultimately, but
that's right.
Frustrating game. But yeah, I'm just looking at the team for that day. That's not a bad team, you know, but they had some good players as well, like Stephen Reid and David Thompson. Morten Gamst-Pedersen as well was a really good player of that era.
I was trying to look who their manager was at the time.
Mark Hughes at the time.
It was Hughes. Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, you know, I suppose the Man United one in 97 is maybe a bit more... I've talked about it before, though, and it was, you know, even though we lost, it was still a good game, you know, so... And they were a much better team than us at that point, so...
Yeah.
This one just felt like, oh, we went there, like, thinking we were going to roll them over, and it was just a dire game, and they just, like... It was just a very Everton, do you know what I mean? Everton result, really.
One you should win.
Yeah.
Where you managed to find a way, conspire to lose it somehow.
And it was just a dreadful game. There wasn't much in it, you know? It's just,
yeah.
I suppose that's what stuck out to me. And also the fact that we were sat next to a Blackburn fan, it was like... Because he was talking about it and then they scored, so it was like,
yeah. Oh,
God, okay. You'd obviously couldn't get a ticket in the away end, so he'd... Gone in the home end. Yeah.
Gone on undercover.
Yeah. What's yours?
And well, mine's far worse than that. There was a few that I had in mind. It's quite a recent one, but it was the one that just sort of kept coming back into my mind. And it's from the 22-23 season under Lampard. It was at home to Southampton on, let's see the date, 14th of January, 2023. And it's lived long in infamy and will continue to for all this stuff after the game. But the game itself, I mean, if you look at our starting lineup that day, it's actually a decent side for all the talk of, you know, Lampard not having much to work with. I mean, it's a 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1 formation with Pickford in goal, obviously, and back three of Ben Godfrey, Connor Cody, on his season-long loan, and Tarkowski, and then wing-backs Coleman and Mikalenko, Amadou Onana and Idrissa Gueye in the middle, and Iwobi and Damari Gray, two cams behind Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which is not a bad lineup, is it?
But was Gordon involved in that one?
He was on the bench, yeah. He came off the bench sort of late in the second half, but Southampton were fucking dire. At the time, it was when Nathan Jones was in charge, and they hadn't won at Goodison for something like 25 years, 26 years, something ridiculous like that. And I'm not sure if they'd, you know, they'd barely won a game that season. They were really poor, you know. So obviously, come to Everton if you want to, you know, break your duck or end a losing streak. But it was a really poor game. We went ahead. Onana scored just before half time, or like after 40 minutes from a corner. Like, we sort of dominated possession but didn't do much with it, and then got a goal from the corner. And then second half, Southampton changed their shape a little bit, and they equalised like 2 minutes after half time. James Ward-Prowse on 46 minutes just played through us as teams were doing at that time.
Yeah.
Like, and I was sat, I think, where was I? I'd been in the lower Bullens, but like sort of high up. And I remember I was at Patrick and Niall had to sort of stand on this like little concrete bit behind us so they could see over the crowd. And from where we were, the shape of the team was just as bad as I've ever seen any Everton team. You know, as we talked about in the last pod about Lampard, you know, we got a lot of leeway, I think, because of how he came across and his, you know, the positive side of him, his personality and charisma and stuff. But it was that game where I realised this guy is absolutely fucking clueless. You know, the midfield was just all over the place. They were just waltzing through. This was Southampton, you know, a really poor team, and they were absolutely dominating possession. And then when you've got James Ward-Prowse playing against you, one thing you definitely don't do is give away stupid free kicks, because He was one of the best free kicks, free kick takers in the Premier League. So what do we do? Not long after Gordon's come on he came on about 70 minutes in, and then about 5 or 6 minutes later, he bundles one of their players over outside the box, and James Ward-Prowse, sure enough, scores from the result.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
And it just went instantly. You know when you just feel the atmosphere turn, like it had been building, you know, it was tense and it was getting pretty hostile, getting pretty toxic. But as soon as that went in, you know, it was so inevitable, like everyone could see what was going to happen. Like as soon as he got the free kick, it was like, well, it's going to be a goal, isn't it? And Pickford did his sort of a thing that he has a tendency to do from free kicks, where he just stands and watches, like he did against United at the weekend. You know, it's the one sort of consistent failing of his, really, is that he does get caught up. It's a little bit with free kicks. He was just static. You know, it's obvious where it was going, and he just stood and watched it. And
do you think there's something in the way he sets up the wall as well? Because he seems
possibly,
to take,
I don't know. I don't know why it is.
As if his side, he's going to cover this side, and then he doesn't. So it's like weird.
Yeah. But, you know, he did that again anyway. And it was just, you know, the atmosphere went from a little bit toxic to just, you know, febrile. And it was just horrible. Like the boos and, you know, the shouting at the end was just full on, you know. And then that was when the likes of Mina and Gordon were getting blocked in by fans, trying to drive away. All that ridiculous footage of them being confronted by fans, you know. And then I'm not sure if that was the game where the so-called headlock happened, or if that had already been alleged, and you know that had added to the hostility and tension in the crowd, because obviously everyone knew that was nonsense and it never happened, or if it came from this. But it was just horrible, you know. Talk about toxic atmospheres at games, you know, that was one of the worst that I've experienced, like. And that, I think that's what stood out, as well as how poor we were, how shit the team was, how clueless I realised the manager really was. And how he'd just been getting by purely on, you know, being a positive vibes merchant. It was that, you know, it was the horrible toxicity around it. You know, just getting away from the game, like even on the streets, you could feel it, you know. I was thinking, I just want to get the kids away from this, you know. Both still fairly young at that point. Look, this is just fucking horrible.
I think the whole thing was just, and really, for years really, but the whole thing, it was like a maelstrom of events, wasn't it? It wasn't just the manager or the team itself. It was the off the field. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that added to the sort of volcanic tension that was going on, because there was a lot going on off the field, wasn't there?
Yeah.
With the, you know, the chairman, the owner, the club was on its arse. The club was, you know, struggling financially, and there was no direction from above. You know, there was splits in the fan base. Some people who liked Lampard, some people didn't. Some people liked Mashiri, some people didn't. Some people loved Ken Wright, some people. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing was just like really fractious. So you add in like poor, bad result against the, you know, not a great team either.
Yeah.
In a game you're expected to, you know, well, you're expected to win, aren't you?
Well, that you need to win. We're already in a bit of a relegation battle. Like that took us down.
Relegation battle. Not just our first relegation battle either, you know.
Yeah, that took us down to 19th. That they were 20th. They were bottom of the table and stayed bottom of the table. But we were 18th at the start of the game and ended up in 19th. So very much in a relegation battle.
There were a lot of things going on at that point at the club. And also, I think a lot of it started with Benitez being, I mean, we talked about this a lot in the last pod, didn't we? But a lot of it started with Benitez being appointed, which was just a mad decision, really.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it wasn't a good time. And we got a lot of stick on social media from other fans, you know, for all that as well, which you can understand, you know, because
it was awful. Yeah,
I think sometimes, you know, I'm not excusing fans or anything, but sometimes it gets to that point because things aren't dealt with. You know what I mean? It felt like a lot of we weren't even getting any communication from the club. We didn't know what was going on, so there was kind of this like, but it's never an excuse to, you know, barrack players or anything like that. I don't think. But
no, of course not.
I'm just saying what adds to the anger.
Yeah, that's all part of it. That's all what, you know, kept me going back to this as the worst one.
If you're told, you know, what's going on, aspects. As a fan, if you're told what's going on, sometimes you can handle it a bit more. It's like later on we were told we had no money and blah blah, but at that point we were still like, I don't know, we felt like we were in the dark a little bit genuinely how much of a shit show things were.
Yeah, there was just a vacuum of like communication and information, wasn't there?
Yeah.
A little side note to that one. Bonus points if you can guess who came off the bench for Southampton after 61 minutes.
So that would be 2022. Ooh.
22-23 season. An Everton connection.
Gareth Barry? No, he wasn't playing then. Did he play for Everton?
Yeah.
He did.
Well, not telling you when, but...
Southampton. Theo Walcott?
Nope.
He went back there, didn't he?
I think more recent. Or current, even, for Everton.
Trying to think who went back there. Who went there? Striker?
No.
Midfielder?
Yeah.
I'm crap at guessing today. Midfielder?
Did you give in?
Gibson? No, it wouldn't have been Gibson. That was too before.
It wasn't an ex-Everton player. It was a future Everton player.
Okay. Alcaraz.
That's the one. Charlie Alcaraz. Came off the bench on the hour and made a goal line clearance from, I think it was a Ben Godfrey header, which would have made it, I think it would have made it 2-1 to us. No, it would have made it 2-all, I think it was.
Well, he must have been like 19, 20 then.
He was very young then, yeah.
He's only like 22, 23 now, isn't he?
I'm not sure how old he is, but yeah, he's pretty like young. Like, yeah, he hadn't quite established himself there, yeah.
That's quite good, though, that you can, you know, get a bit of experience early on like that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my worst. So let's...
I never would have guessed that if you're going to give me clues.
I gave you quite a few clues there.
You did.
Okay, go on then. What's your best one? And what was your sort of main criteria?
It's a tricky one because I wanted to pick... In a way, I was going to pick the Man City one that I talked about before. The 2-1 in the 2004-05 season? But I've actually gone with a more recent one because of the whole atmosphere around it, and it was a really good. It was 11 years ago, and obviously it circles back to now because it was David Moyes' last game at Man United. The 2-0 at home. Because we were in the Gladys Street, and it was just a really good atmosphere. Do you know what I mean? And I think. The last time I'd been, it wasn't as good as that. And it was, you know, because it was the first sort of... Was it the first season of Martinez? Yeah, the first season. Or two. I can't remember now, anyway. But just the whole thing around it, I guess. The atmosphere was great. We were in the Gladys Street. It was a late game as well. Yeah, it was a late game and... It was just the whole thing around it. Obviously, David Moyes coming back, and there'd been a bit of thing because he tried to, you know, get Fellaini and he got Fellaini and Baines, and maybe even Coleman as well at one point. But and he was struggling at Man United, and you know, there was a bit of irony there. You even had the Grim Reaper there. There was just a whole lot of things surrounding the game that made it memorable. And it was a really good performance from us. We were in our pomp under Martinez there. You had Lukaku, Morales doing really well. I think Baines scored a penalty.
Yeah.
And then it was Morales on the break, doubled our lead. And it was just a really good... And I remember, I think it was Naismith played as well. I'm trying to get the... I've got the BBC report up here.
Team, yeah.
Naismith played. And what he was doing really well playing up... Because when Lukaku went off for... They were kind of alternating, because Lukaku often played off the wing, didn't he, as well, often in this period. But Naismith was like leaping like a a gazelle, you know. He's only tiny.
He did really well under Martinez, didn't he? You know, he played under Moyes, you know, made a few good contributions, but he became a very different player under Martinez. Got that hat trick against Chelsea, didn't he? And he popped up with some important goals. And I think he just one of those players who he just needed a different type of manager to use him in the right way. And like I say, he'd sort of interchange with Lukaku, and you know, he'd sometimes sort of drift wide a little bit, but generally play sort of just off the striker, and wasn't the quickest, but was quite clever, wasn't he? You know, how he found a little bit of space, and he was a good finisher as well. He had that season, he did really well, didn't he?
Yeah, he was, and he'd just play off, and he'd sort of pick up little goals, and yeah, he'd also make himself a nuisance, and he just really ran himself into the ground, didn't he? Yeah, didn't he score like a hat-trick against Chelsea or something like that?
Yeah, just said, yeah, he got a hat-trick against Chelsea.
Sorry, yeah, right. My brain isn't working today. But yeah, it's just the whole thing around it. And then at half-time, I saw Andy Burnham and his sons in the right. concourse as well. So just the whole thing around the game, do you know what I mean? And it was Moyes' last at Man United. It's quite ironic, you know, now that Moyes has come back. I mean, I never really had bitterness towards him, but it was quite ironic.
Other than, you know, it's a bit shitty that he tried to sort of lowball us with Baines and Fellaini, but you know, it's what happens, isn't it? You know, it probably wasn't his personal decision. It's other people that do that sort of thing. He will have identified them as players he wanted, but
I found it quite funny.
I was never resentful. Sorry, go on.
I found it quite funny because I heard him being interviewed about when he got offered the Man United job. He basically went and saw Sir Alex. He just got like a text from him, and he said, he went to his house and he said, you're the next manager. And he's like, well, the next manager of Man United. He went, yeah. he didn't really give him a choice. So.
Yeah, but, you know, he was in the last year of his contract, wasn't he? He hadn't made his mind up either way. And then he got offered the Man United job. I mean, what else is he really going to do, you know? I mean, I don't think anyone was desperate for him to stay. He'd been there for a long time. I think everyone felt it was maybe a time for a change for him and for us. You know, I didn't understand the bitterness towards him leaving. So I understand a little bit the, you know, trying to get our players on the cheap, which he'd always been so resistant to when he was our manager. But, you know, fucking hell, if you can't let that go, however many years further on we are, like over a decade further on, I mean, get over that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good... Just looking at the team, that's the back four really stands out for me. Coleman, who would have been, you know, probably in his pomp then, wouldn't he, or coming into his best years.
He was very good Baines, that day as well, yeah.
Baines at left-back, still probably, you know, one of the best left-backs in Europe, and John Stones and Sylvain Distan in the middle. That's, you know, really good back four, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm trying to get up our points total that season, because it was our best points total, wasn't it, or something, in the Premier League era or something?
Yeah, like I think in any other season it would have got us in, or up until that point anyway, any other season it would have got us into the Champions League.
I can't find it, though. Was it something like 74 points or something like that?
I can't remember.
I can't find it. All I want is the league table. A kingdom for a league table. It'd be 2013-14, wouldn't it? Would it?
Yeah, we finished fifth. Yeah, 72 points we had.
Yeah. So that was really good. And yeah, and in most seasons, like you say, that would be top four, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. And then the other time we finished in the top four, we got knocked out in the playoff game.
Yeah. Thanks to anyway. Bug Eyes, Pierluigi Collina.
Over to you. You might have something more further back.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying earlier, like sometimes it's not just the match itself. It's, you know, other things around it. And I kept coming back to this one, and I didn't really want to pick it because ultimately it's a game that we lost, although not in normal time. But it was just such a good experience in general. It's the round of 16 UEFA Cup second leg at home to Fiorentina.
Yeah, that was a great game.
I'll give you the exact date. Wednesday, the 12th of March, 2008. And we'd lost the first leg 2-0 away at Fiorentina, so we were kind of not quite written off, but, you know, I don't think anyone was expecting us to go through. But just right from the start, you know, night match, kind of nothing to lose. And we just really, really went for it. I think the feeling was that if we didn't get an early goal, you know, we could forget about it kind of thing. But if we could get one relatively early on, that would give them something to worry about a little bit and give us something to play for. And so it proved. Andy Johnson got one after 16 minutes. A real scrappy one. It was from, I think it was an Arteta cross from the left. And it just kind of like bounced through the defenders in between a couple and bounced up. And I think it went in off Johnson's face or like his shoulder or the side of his head or something, you know, just kind of like bobbled over the line. But obviously getting a goal early on, 16 minutes in, that gives you some belief and some momentum. And the atmosphere from then on was just fantastic. You know, we really went for it. We sort of rode our luck a little bit, like Howard had to make a couple of good saves, Tim Howard in goal. But it was just such a intense, like it was everything that Southampton game wasn't, you know, all that energy that you can get from having nearly 40,000 people crammed in together. But, you know, all positive rather than all negative, you know, all positive and all hopeful. And then in the second half, we just continued to batter them. And then on 67 minutes, Arteta scored absolute beauty, you know, one of the best goals of that era. For us, you know, we just received it just inside their half. He just took a nice touch, knocked it over his feet, took it on, just hit a beautiful right-footed strike in into the bottom. I think he just clipped the inside of the post. And that, you know, you talk about like limbs in celebrations. That was the best limbs celebration I've ever been involved in. Like, I remember jumping up and some fella in front of me who I didn't know turned around, grabbed me like around the waist and lifted me up. I thought I was going to, you know, go toppling forward. I managed to sort of turn myself around so my weight was kind of like pointing the right way so I didn't go flying forward. And as I turned around, I saw someone like actually sort of crowd surfing down towards me. I don't know if it was a deliberate crowd surf or he'd done the same sort of thing. He's jumped up and like gone over the people in front of him. But he's like, you know, crowd surfing down a couple of rows of people in front of him. And it was just frenzied celebration. It was fantastic. And then obviously that took us level overall in the tie.
Yeah.
But we just couldn't get the third goal. Like, we had a couple of chances that maybe we should have scored. Anichibi came on in extra time, who was our kind of secret weapon in the Europa League. He used to score some really important goals, usually coming off the bench. So he went on in place of Pienaar. And then Gravesen came on just at the last because it was obviously going to go to penalties. And that's where it falls short because, you know, Everton's track record in penalty shootouts, as we know, is fucking atrocious. And Yakubu missed his one, hit it off the inside of the post. And then Jagielka missed his. So we went out. So I say it ultimately ended in defeat. But which, you know, is kind of the reason I hesitated in choosing it, because choosing a defeat as your best game seems kind of lame, you know, and very, it's the kind of thing cop-outs would take the piss out of us for, your best ever game and you lost kind of thing. So I hesitated, but I say it's, you know, football's about more than that, isn't it? You know, it's not just winning stuff. It, you know, I was with my mate Terry, who I hardly ever get to see these days because he's, you know, lives back in Birkenhead and don't get there that much. He bought me a ticket for it, you know, for my birthday or whatever it was. I wasn't expecting it, so it was kind of a surprise. And, you know, a night match, went for a few pints in all the pubs round Goodison, and it was just a, you know, fantastic atmosphere. It was all the good stuff about football, basically, you know, with someone who, you know, you enjoy their company, you know, that adds to the experience. The atmosphere was great in a positive way. Ended in defeat, but, you know, say it's not just about what you win, that kind of thing, is it? It's the whole overall experience, and that's why I had to go for that one. So I went back and forth on loads, especially like from the more successful era of the 80s, and then, you know, around that first Joe Royal season when there were lots of really good games. But that was the one I just sort of kept coming back to, you know. And that was a good team we were playing as well, the Fiorentina side, like Christian Vieri playing for them, up front, you know, some really, really class players. So they were very, I think they went on to win it, actually, or at least they got into the final. So, you know, sort of case of so near so far. And if we'd got through, we may well have gone on to win it, having beat a team like that. But, yeah, just a great night, all in all.
Yeah, that European run was probably the best I actually remember, you know, personally, just because the 80s, sort of a bit of a, I mean, I remember some of the late 80s stuff, but that is the one I most, you know, remember most vividly, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Football is, you know, it's more than just about winning trophies. Although if you go on Twitter, often people go, they're obsessed with it. You know, a lot of people, a lot of fans. But to me, it's as much about community and family. Because obviously, I mentioned before, it was my uncle who used to take me and I was going to mention about my first one as well. Another, a bit like you, my granddad had a season ticket for that season as well. So I think a lot of us went because he couldn't go, do you know what I mean, as well?
Yeah.
And also the guy he sat next to lost his season ticket as well. So, yeah, it's just, a lot of it I associate with family, really, you know. One side of my family is pretty much all Blues, you know. There's a few Liverpool fans in there, but there always is, but most of them are Blues, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's just the moments as well, isn't it? You know, to like that Arteta goal, you know, just that memory of like being lifted up by a complete stranger, turning around and seeing someone probably accidentally crowd surfing down a few rows in the lower bullens, you know, it's just little isolated memories like that. It's not even like whole games, is it? You know, you can have like some incredible memory in an otherwise fairly meaningless game, or, you know, the sort of, like you say, the sentiments, you know, of who you go with and, you know, your match rituals, whatever it may be, you know, if you go to a certain pub, or, you know, if you like get a train up from somewhere, if you're not living close by or whatever, it's all those little things that make up the experience, isn't it? It's not just the games themselves. And I think that's a big part of what everyone's going to miss when we do leave. It's just those memories that have that, you know, the experience and the sentiment attached to them. It's much more than football, isn't it? It's much more than, you know, who you beat or who scored or whatever like that. It's all, everything that surrounds it.
Especially with Goodison, because it's just the history of the place. And there's just such a, I said this to you after Derby, you know, there's just such like a, there's a bit of a magic about the place. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like, I'm not saying the ground can do this, because it's, you know, it's still a football match, but the idea that, you know, we were going to lose like that to Liverpool in the last game, it's almost like Goodison wasn't having it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't having it. And that was what, I think that's what made that moment so, you know, obviously it's against, you know, Liverpool in the last minute, Derby, blah, blah, you know, but it's just that moment. Yeah. It, you know, and people go, oh, why are you celebrating? It's like, well, that's football, isn't it? That is football.
If you don't understand why that was a cause for celebration, then you shouldn't be watching football, because you're obviously not watching it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, that was a special moment, and I wouldn't begrudge anyone, any team in those circumstances celebrating a dramatic moment like that, because that's what it was. And if you have to have that explained to you, then you don't understand what the whole experience of football really means to people. You know, it's
really, not to be harsh, but I think a lot of people who've just never gone to a football match in their life.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that's exactly it. You know, it's telly clappers and, you know, Twitter fans, isn't it, who probably don't go to football and have never regularly gone to football. That's why they need it explaining to them. Or they go to football because they know the team's going to win. You know, they attach themselves to some team that they know is more likely to be successful. So any true football fan at any level of any team would understand why that moment, that Tarkowski goal, was worthy of that level of celebration. You don't have to explain that to a genuine fan of any team.
It was incredible. I think it was the fact that I just didn't see it coming either.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no, we'd had chances before that, but it was for about 10 minutes they had the ball, and it was just like this one, you know, it was like this one moment, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
Also, often you don't see Tarkowski up there like that, unless it's a, you know, a corner or a free kick or whatever. The fact that he went up there for it.
Yeah. When it dropped, I was thinking, well, this is going straight over the Gladys screen.
Proper limbs, like you say, limbs. Yeah.
And it's who it was as well, you know, because it was an unlikely source that added even yet another layer of drama to it. You know, if it had been your main striker or whatever, you kind of would have expected it a bit more. But your centre back, who's not known for his goal scoring, certainly from like open play, that's what another little extra frisson, wasn't it?
Well, it's a thing you'll never forget as well, because it's the last kick in a Goodison derby, isn't it?
Yeah.
At home, so yeah. What a way to go out, really. But hopefully there's a few more. There's only 5 or 6 games left, isn't there? So
yeah, it's getting so close, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd really like to make it to one, but it doesn't seem to be easy to get a ticket, so.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to get to at least one or two before the end of it. But yeah, some incredible memories. And I think, you know, despite having endured, you know, in recent years, nothing but struggle, and then, you know, going back to sort of after our sort of glory period, you know, I'm working on that book about the time just after that. You know, we've had a lot of years of sort of mediocrity and struggle with, you know, punctuated with the odd sort of positivity in terms of, you know, where we finished and challenging for things and stuff. But I think when we leave, it's all the good stuff that people are going to take with them, isn't it? I think obviously any negative stuff adds colour to it, you know, and it is part of the overall experience, but what's going to stand out is all the good stuff, all the memorable stuff that we've tried to focus on here. And I think that's what's going to make it a heartbreaking thing for fans on that last day against Southampton. It's just things that you'll never forget. You won't replicate anywhere else, but as you say, hopefully in Bramley Moor, you know, it'll build a new legacy of its own, a new history of its own.
It's different though, isn't it? Like you say, it's funny doing this, because you do tend to remember the moments, even if they're in a defeat or whatever. They're just that moment, like you said, that celebration, that guy beside you sort of like hugs you when you scored and stuff like that.
Yeah,
who you went with and what happened. I suppose that's why I remember that Man United one, just because so much happened that day, and it was just, it felt like a real good atmosphere as well, because of we had that chant, the School of Sciences on the way back and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, I don't know. That's why that stood out for me. But there are other good ones. But yeah, like you say, it's that, those kind of memories down the years that you'll sort of look back on, really, and the players you've seen and people that you went with. And
That's
what stands out, in much more.
I think we can wrap that up there, but I hope that's prompted some memories for anyone listening. It'd be good to hear other people's first, worst and best matches, and if anyone remembers any of the matches we've talked about specifically, it'd be good to hear people's views on that. But
yeah,
I think we can leave it there for today. Thanks for listening. Up the fucking toffees.
Up the toffees.